welcome to another episode of the Two Idiots Podcast. I'm Reg. I'm Randy, is what Randy would say, but he is off gallivanting across the... I always come up with random things. He's in the Australian desert hunting geckos. That's what he's. That's what we're going to say he's doing. And instead, joining us this week, we have Mr. Brad St. Croix from Ottawa, if I remember correctly. Did I nail the name?
Yep, that's good.
What's the weirdest way telemarketers have pronounced your name?
Croix, Crox, heard them all.
Yeah, my last name is Weeb, so I get that quite a lot. But it's spelt not like that, so it's always YB and Weeby and Web and
Anyway. Yeah, I don't get upset about it anymore. I just kind of go with it.
Nope. Even my first name Reg, people read it and they're like, "Oh, is it under Reg?" I'm like, "Yes, sure."
Sure, why not?
Yeah, whatever you want. anyway, welcome here. How's it going?
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's going good. Yeah, excited to be on the podcast.
Well, you shouldn't be, but I'm glad you feel that way. So this episode will be dropping on Remembrance Day, so we should say Happy Remembrance Day, lest we forget everything. And the reason is you reached out to us. You are a, I don't know if you call yourself a historian, but you you run the On This Day in Canadian Military History on Twitter and on YouTube, and I'm not sure elsewhere. So maybe let's start with how that all started, or kind of describe the channels to people that are listening.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's also on Facebook and Instagram. So it started on just exclusively on Twitter about 2.5 years ago now. I don't know. I was just using Twitter basically for networking because there's a lot of history people on there.
Sure. And,
yeah, I have a PhD in history, so I do kind of.
So you're a historian.
Myself a historian. So I was just using that because I liked it. I used to be into Twitter a long time ago and got back into it. So I just kind of sprung from there. I noticed something like there was all these kinds of On This Day type accounts. There's all these military history accounts, but nothing for Canada specifically. So I just kind of did it on a whim. I just sort of thought about it and thought, why not? Something that, kind of let me flex my researching and kind of muscles that I developed and was just working on my dissertation at the time. So it was something a little different because things can get a little monotonous, which, a lot of people out there listening will understand when you're kind of doing the same thing every day. It's sure. Just nice to kind of break it up with something small. So, and then it just started getting really popular and just all kinds of different people started following me. And then it just kind of bloomed from there. And I decided to kind of expand in the other social media areas. And then I noticed on YouTube as well, nothing really existed. There's some other accounts that I don't think they're active in any way, shape or form that really focus on Canadian military history specifically. Like we've got Canadian ones, and but even again it's a small group. So I just kind of used the same name just because I thought it would be a good idea to keep it all under the same name, and then just kind of do whatever content I feel like. So I do all the different kinds of things. Historical videos, I do book reviews, have other historians, people interested in this stuff on different topics on, and it's going pretty well so far.
I love that. No, and I definitely don't have a PhD in literally anything. So, but I've always been fascinated by history in general. So I'm curious, was that always something that as a kid, it sort of piqued your interest and you sort of leaned into it as an adult or what?
Yeah, a bit of a bumpier road, but so I've always had an interest in history as far as I can really remember. Mm-hmm. I think it really comes from my grandfather. He's a World War II vet himself. Wow. Was in history all the time. He was always, whenever we go visit, he was always reading something new. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of bloomed from there. And then, I went to university, did my undergrad in history, and then did my master's actually in American studies, which I think is quite funny because it's a very different path than I was on now. And then took a bit of a break, did the kind of other job sort of thing, decided that's not for me. So decided to jump back into academics, get the PhD, and I just defended in August. So I've only had it for a little while now. So it's still fairly fresh to me. So
freshly minted. That's good.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's pretty much how it kind of went. That's the real short version. Yeah, it's been a long road, but it's kind of always what I wanted to do. And then I kind of just made one day and said, I'm going to go for it. And then I did.
which is great. That's always a solid message to teach to people, go after what you like.
Honestly, it's a cliche, but it's true. Life's too short and to be miserable. So.
Oh, amen. We're kind of all in that age group now. I think, I don't know how old you are, but me and my friends, my wife, everyone else, we're kind of getting to that point where, you know, you've been doing this job since you're 16 or 18 and you're like, you know, it's not worth hating your job anymore. So yep. everybody's sort of moving around.
Get that for sure. Yep.
Yeah. So then, shout out to obviously your you said your grandpa and perhaps other family members and any veterans that may listen to this and anyone actively serving, anyone, shout out to them again, Remembrance Day. It's, you know, I think it's important that we don't forget, right? And we recently chatted with Heather McBriarty, and you had mentioned that you had her on as well. And, yeah. And even hearing that, because so often World War One gets swept under the rug. No, most people don't even know how it started. And frankly, I'm not even entirely sure why it started. It's one of those things that I haven't dug enough into. But even that, like the stories get lost. And sooner or later, as World War II vets pass away, World War II will probably start fading too. I mean, I hope not, but I think we need to keep it fresh.
I mean, that's kind of one of the motivators that started me on this kind of that social media path, and then kind of doing this, what they call like the public history kind of element here is how do you connect with people? How do you get them interested in this? I thought, you know, short and sweet was a good way to start. So that's kind of the thinking behind that. And I completely agree. Yeah. The different conflicts, I mean, and then there's the whole Korean War, which is another occupies a different place in Canadian memory and that kind of thing.
If at all.
I mean, there's a tiny, these are how these things tend to go in Canadian military history. If it's a small event to begin with, there's just less people, less voices, right? So you get less quickly. That's kind of my motivator, is to make sure these things are not forgotten. The good, bad, and the ugly, as I like to say sometimes, because
of course
that's just how I think this has to be done. I don't want to leave stuff out. So,
and of course I can't talk about Canadian history without shouting out friend of the show, Craig Baird, Canadian History X, From John to Justin, a whole bunch of different podcasts. Canada's Great War. I learned more about the First World War than I ever had since started listening to his show. And again, he covers things from, he'll try and get as objective sources as he can and to tell the story what it is. And sometimes it's not a good thing, but I think it's something that we need to know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. He does great work. Yeah, he's a good supporter of mine as well. And I really like his work and how he goes about doing it and the different ways. We've talked about different elements, different stories, different sources. We've talked about all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's really good to see how he goes about it and kind of does it in a different way. And I frankly think that's a good thing. So
it's the history community. It's
yeah,
communities, I mean, in general. We're a pretty rinky-dink little podcast here, but I think it's important that people that create anything, people that are musicians or writers or podcasters or video makers, or, you know, we need to be supportive.
Yeah, that's what I do. So I completely agree. Yeah. Any of these things, especially as people are always saying, right, support Canadian. But I mean, that's a big part of why I do what I do, is because, yeah, obviously support Canadian because I am Canadian, work in Canada and everything. Mm-hmm. But this is the only way we're going to remember these stories. Yes, other nationalities, other people are interested in some Canadian stories. If we don't do it ourselves, nobody's going to do it. So
exactly,
that's another big motivator for me is just that. We have to do our own. We have to tell our own stories. We have to do our own thing because nobody else is going to do it for us.
And so much of it is centered around the American experience, and especially in Canada. So I think it's important that we kind of carve out our own niche and our own lane. Be like, well, yeah, Americans do their thing and Canadians do our thing. So I'm curious, along that thread, as I guess a descendant of a veteran, what does Remembrance Day mean to you?
It means so many different things. I mean, I have all different kinds of somewhat contradictory thoughts about it in many ways. I have personal connections to, like I said, with my grandfather was a veteran. My great grandfather was a veteran in the First World War. A couple years ago, I just discovered that a great uncle of mine was killed on Juno Beach on D-Day.
No kidding.
And I've got to visit his grave and the spot where, and I researched it, right? Because I'm an academic, right? Like I was trained in the academics. So I researched as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And I think I went to the spot where it happened, which was very, you know, something I had to do. I had to know. I just always have to know. That's kind of another motivator of mine. Just, I got to know.
But it's also a curse. Just, I feel the similar impulse.
Yeah, it's just sometimes I can't, sometimes it's better not to know, but, anyway, so I have those family connections. So of course, remembering it is something I do pretty well. I do on a daily basis, but it's also there's the academic side of me that, you know, has to see the problems with it and how, like, there's the commercialization, the people who use it for their own ends in nasty ways. People use it to basically start conflict with each other, which I don't like, and that's not the intention or the intention of what it was started for and what I think it should be used for. I have an issue with that, but again, I don't really have much power in kind of controlling these things. So it's something important, and I go to the ceremonies when I can before COVID and when everything got shut down. It's a very important day for me, but it's something I do all the time. Remembrance is something always on my mind. And the part of, you know, the academic side of me has to be tampered down a little bit sometimes, being like, the remembrance part is okay. You can do it just to remember, and that's perfectly fine. But that's an academic kind of thing going on. But now that PhD is done, I can tamper that down a lot easier.
Kind of
now.
Enjoy things a little bit more. Not even necessarily enjoy, but experience things a bit more. Speaking of experiences, I've also been to Juno Beach, and truly powerful. It was brutally cold when we were there. We were there in October of 2018. And windy, but going around hearing the story that they basically, right where the Canadian Discovery Center is, for those listening that have never been, they discovered, I think it was two or three or a certain number of bunkers that were there. And the story that our guide told us the one time was that a French fellow was walking down the beach with his little dog, and his dog just disappeared all of a sudden. He's like, well, where'd my dog go? And then all of a sudden he pops back up out of the sand, like, I don't know, a few yards away. And he's like, what the hell? Where'd you go? And as it turns out, the dog accidentally discovered a previously unknown or submerged in sand, buried bunker. And going through there and walking through the hallways and the corridors and the rooms, and there's still the metal cots on the walls and the bars in the wall, and just thinking that people fought here, they died here, they were here. Like, that stuff, I don't know, it hits me.
Yeah, I mean, same. I've been literally in those same bunkers you're talking about. I was there 2016-ish. 2016, spring of 2016. And I've seen that bunker complex there. Those are all over that part of Normandy, all the five beaches. Those are powerful. Like you said, just being in the place is its own experience. Sometimes it's hard to describe. For me specifically, with the kind of connections I have to it and everything, but it's something to be experienced. The Juno Beach Center, and they do great work. They're great. I know lots of people who are there and connections to them, and they're doing important work, I think, because they're trying to keep that memory alive, but in Europe, which I think is difficult because so many reasons. You know, Europe's got a lot going on. In terms of history and just even current. I mean, it's and Normandy, right, itself is super busy in terms of, you know, tourism and memory and everything. So I cannot give them a bit of a shout out, but they're doing kind of the same thing on a bigger scale that a lot of us are trying to do.
And it was, I brought a friend of mine, a coworker of mine, asked me to bring a photo of his, I forget his relationship to the man, it might have been his grandpa or his uncle or someone that he knew that also was a part of, I think, the Winnipeg Rifles that landed on that beach. Yep. And so then I took some pictures. He gave me a picture to kind of leave in the sand and sort of take some pictures and kind of bring them back. And I grabbed a handful of stones. I have them upstairs, actually, of right from Juno Beach. Obviously, it's 70 years later, so it's not the same beach. The beachhead's moving, the bunker, everything's shifting. But just to know that within, 25 feet of where I'm standing, hundreds and, you know, thousands of Canadians and you know, British and US troops and everyone in general were there fighting to liberate Europe. And that's, if someone doesn't get revved up by that, you can't help them.
I mean, it's just, understanding it, the context, obviously as a historian, context is everything, but just like you said, for anyone visiting there, if you're not hit by the gravity of that place, you're just not paying attention or don't care, whatever it is. I think that's a perfect way to say it. Like, it's just, it's got this energy and
it does
an understanding to it. It's
especially really as Canadians
on a podcast to explain, but
yeah, that's
the way it is.
Of course. And especially as Canadians, where for so often our stories and our experiences are overshadowed, which makes sense on some level as part of, you know, the British Empire. I get it. That makes sense why a lot of it isn't. But we're starting to reclaim it, and I'm glad that we are. And we're also always seen as, you know, Uncle Sam's little brother, and or not even little brother, his distant cousin that shows up sometimes. Like that seems to be the vibe that we get. Maybe you won't remember, but what was sort of like the first couple of posts that you made that maybe stand out to you, or if you do remember your first couple, any other clips there?
I can't even remember the first one. Honestly, I couldn't tell you. First one was probably just some random thing I found quickly. Mm-hmm. These all kinds of sources, and I have different objectives what I'm trying to do. But the ones, some of the early ones, and something that wasn't really my intention when I started the Twitter account, at least, was doing individual soldiers or service members who had died in service. Sure. That wasn't something like I had planned to do or even really, you know, thought about. I thought I was gonna be like, hey, I can educate people on the small little things. But that's something I do all the time. And the first couple ones of those are the ones that stick out to me. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the biggest first ones that really hit me was the four soldiers from the RCR, sorry, the Royal Canadian Regiment, who were killed in the friendly fire incident in Afghanistan. Mm. I mean, I just remember hearing about that and how much of a shock that was. And having that as a post from one of my earliest ones was something that really stuck with me and still has. And people really responded to that one. So it's just something I always keep in mind. So that's probably one of the biggest ones that sticks out for me.
As it happens, we had a guest that was almost there. He was in Afghanistan when that happened. And his regiment almost got sent out instead of them. They were told, get ready, get all your shit on. You're going to be doing some stuff. And then last minute, they were told, no, these guys are going to go. And then they're the ones that got taken out with friendly fire. Like, I can only imagine.
Yeah, that's war. That's the randomness of war. That's mm-hmm. just things go. But yeah, like it's just those stories. I think it's probably the best way to say that is the stories are what stick with me and the personal level and really getting into that, which is something I didn't often get to do with the academic work, so to speak. Yeah. So it's something really value doing.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you're doing it the way that you're doing it, because a lot of people I know are like, oh, I hate history. It's boring. History's boring. And I'm like, well, you're not either someone's not teaching it to you right, or you're not looking up the right stuff. Because if you can find the human element, that's what connects it. When you're reading a Wikipedia page and it's like 750 soldiers stormed this place and did that and 500 of them died and then they blah, 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 blah. I mean, I kind of enjoy some of that, but I can understand why a lot like the average person might not. So I'm glad that you're kind of tying into the human aspect, much like Heather McBriarty did, much like Craig does. When you can literally look back and read these things and see these pictures and read these stories of the people that were there. Like, it's one thing if some historian writes a book or a manuscript about it, but to actually firsthand, like, that's history. That's what grabs me.
Yeah, like that's what one of the parts of what I do that I feel so lucky to be able to do is those firsthand accounts, those letters, or like anything you can get your hands on, literally, mm-hmm. like, or scribbles. Like I've had scribbles on the backs of paper that were important, or like diaries kept in conditions where they weren't supposed to keep them because they might get killed. Like that's like to me is so powerful, and I feel so lucky. And I say this all the time on the Twitter account. I feel lucky and, you know, kind of, you know, grateful in a way that I get to tell these stories, that mm-hmm. people are willing to listen to me tell them, and that I get it. I mean, it's something I keep in the back of my mind all the time. It's me, but it's all these other people. And to me, that's pretty powerful and kind of keeping me grounded in my work.
Yeah. You become a trusted voice, right? That's a bit of power that you might not have expected that you had. And it's important, or I'm glad that you realize the responsibilities attached to that, right?
There's a lot that I feel that I have to upkeep. I mean, again, we've talked about how the Canadian stories sometimes get lost in the shuffle or mm-hmm. get forgotten or what have you. So I feel like I've got to be a voice. I've got to kind of, you know, stick my nose in places that a lot of Canadians might not try or whatever. I mean, I'm just always, you know, always pushing the Canadian stories.
Speaking of Canadian stories, did your grandpa ever tell you guys actual stories, or was he?
He didn't serve in combat. He was too young, but he was a storyteller. Loved telling stories. how he was a bit of a yarn spinner. So how much all of them were true? Mm. I'm sure there are elements that weren't, but he did tell us, because he didn't experience combat, just like his father didn't. Right? It's so interesting how that side of the family, none of them experienced combat. Which, sorry, this is a bit of an aside, is I'm half English Canadian, half French Canadian.
Okay.
The Canadian side did not serve in combat. The French Canadian side did. So it's just another part of all of this that I think is so interesting. Anyway, but yeah, he would tell us stories about like training. Like he was given a grenade, put in basically a foxhole covered in sandbags, and said good luck basically for training. So he would tell us stories like that, and how the food was crap, and like he got to Halifax and then the war ended, and he claimed that, and the dates line up, that he claimed he got onto a U-boat that had surrendered.
Oh,
I can't access these records yet because of privacy and all these things, but there was a U-boat there. So it's distinctly possible. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, it's things like that. He told us lots of stories like that.
I'm jealous. My one grandpa died when I was 6, and the other one when I was 15-ish. But neither of them, they were both I think one was probably in maybe Mexico at the time, or not. They wouldn't have been old enough, first of all, but to have served in any sort of context, they were Mennonites, and it was all very conscientious objectors. And it was, even if they were to have had to fight, they likely wouldn't have. So, but as a kid growing up, we always had the. I can't help but think it's probably 9/11 that sort of kicked it off, the kind of the love with Americanism, the military and, you know, patriotism and such. But growing up, I always felt a little bit, I don't know, cheated that I didn't have any family members that had served abroad and that I could pick their brains or maybe, I don't know, it sounds bad for some of actually saying it, but sort of almost wear their names as like a badge of honor, you know?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, because it's hard to, I don't know, sometimes the English language is very limiting. There's it's hard to explain that feeling, right? But I mean, that's something I experienced myself when I was younger, because I didn't know about the French side very well until I really started doing the research myself. Like there was myths and side stories and things that were really confirmed until I confirmed them. Mm-hmm. The relative who was killed on D-Day. It's something that I think speaks to something deeper, though, that we want to have a connection, a deeper connection to these events, because they're so important in Canada today. I mean, these things have not just disappeared. They're still impact us on the regular. So I think I get what you're saying. It's hard to describe what that feeling means, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, because war, whether, you know, no matter how you feel about the particular war or war, whatever it is, it's part of the fabric of what makes like a country or a nation what they are, whether you like it or not. You know, like Americans, you know, they build military bases across the world and, you know, manifest destiny and all these things. But that makes that's part of what makes America America, right? And Canada, we have this. It seems like we're starting to finally get the chutzpah to say that, yeah, we're fucking great. You know, like we did some really great things, and the Canadian troops came in and, you know, blew people out of the water with how, I don't know, fearless they were.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're hitting the nail on the head with that one. I mean, for some reason, it seems like, well, I have theories of why that's the case, right? We have this sort of, shame's not the right word, I guess, but maybe it is, the past events. We have this sort of, and it is a myth, this peacekeeping myth, that's what we do. I mean, that was a short period of time, and it wasn't as big as people think it is. We're still fighting conflicts, and we haven't done much peacekeeping as of late. We've done more fighting than peacekeeping, maybe.
Well, let's dig in a little bit. What do you think the impetus of that is? Well, let's get a little controversial.
About the peacekeeping, sorry?
Mm-hmm. And kind of why that myth persists, or sort of...
I think you kind of hit it, because it's the anti-Americanism that runs Canadian society, right? Because as I'm sure most of people know, Canadians anyway, right? That before he was prime minister, Lester Pearson got the Peace Prize, Nobel Peace Prize, for suggesting peacekeeping. He didn't invent it. He suggested it for the Suez Crisis, which ran contrary to British interests at the time, which was a big deal in the mid-50s in Canada. It might not seem like it today, but it was a huge deal then. But also it kind of stands against the Americans of the war makers. You know, we're the peacekeepers. We're the ones who, you know, bring peace. They're the ones who bring war. And that's just not the case. I mean, we've been involved in pretty much every conflict since the Second World War in one way or another. I literally just did a live stream yesterday or 2 days ago, I can't remember, about Canada's involvement in the Vietnam War and what that meant. And it's a lot more than you'd think. And it's that's why I think we have this sort of image we've built up that we're these peacekeepers, we're the ones that are fixing the problems instead of contributing to them or making them.
Yeah.
And we make plenty of our own problems, I'll tell you that much. But it is, and I'm not the only one to say this, so it's not, I guess it's not very controversial in military history circles, but we're not really it's a peacekeeping thing is definitely a myth.
Yeah. And yeah, a lot of people don't want us to even be considered that anyway. But
yeah,
I know a lot of people that would be they'd much prefer if Canada had a more active American-ish presence in conflicts around the world. And I personally don't want that. But I know a lot of people that would. But so let's say, what are there any? I don't know, Canadian military history facts or stories that kind of jump out at you that kind of are your go-tos that, you know, they like to tell people?
Well, there's a lot of those, as you can imagine. So my dissertation actually was on the Battle of Hong Kong.
I know nothing about that. I have an uncle in Hong Kong right now.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Ben, I'd like to go.
But it's great.
COVID kind of quashed those plans for me. If
I went there in 2019, right before COVID became a thing.
I was supposed to go in 2020. Anyway, so that's what I did my dissertation on, literally about how we remember that battle and what that means.
I didn't even know there was a Battle of Hong Kong, really.
Yeah,
to be honest,
it's the first Canadian Army battle of the Second World War, actually.
Cool.
That it's completely forgotten. It's because it didn't go well. They lost pretty badly.
So they were fighting the Japanese?
So that's part of those, like a couple hours after Pearl Harbor, actually, is when the attack on Hong Kong started. They were sent there to kind of deter Japan from attacking because it was a British colony, right?
Yeah.
So obviously it didn't work. Again, it's a very complicated, controversial one. But anyway, so the perception is they were sent as basically lambs to the slaughter for political reasons. And that's what people like to harp. I like to tell the stories of how they fought and what they did there and why they were there.
Yeah.
Because there are still veterans left of this battle. There's not very many. I was lucky to speak with one not that long ago.
Oh, cool.
It was a great experience. And he was forthcoming and basically answering anything I had to ask him. He told me that they're scared of being forgotten, just the Hong Kong vets themselves. So that really motivates me. But also that they're victims. They were not victims. They signed up willingly. Again, this is from a veteran. They knew what could happen. None of them were conscripts. They were all volunteers. So they knew what potentially could happen in a war. You could get killed.
Yeah.
So I like to tell the stories of how they fought. And they fought very well in terrible, terrible circumstances. So that's one of the angles I like to tell. And then the other ones are my go-to are Normandy. Just because there are so many, there's so many stories that, again, like we were kind of talking about the American Hollywood presence, right? If these stories were Americans,
yeah,
there would have been 6 movies about it by now. But because there were Canadian exploits, they kind of don't get focused on or don't get attention. And just some of the personal exploits that happened in Normandy are just amazing.
And, absolutely. Sorry to interrupt. I was quickly looking up the Battle of Hong Kong, and something came across. Free France was the government in exile led by French General Charles de Gaulle during the Second World War. I have never heard of this in my life.
That's funny, because where you were on Juno Beach is actually where Charles de Gaulle came back to France for the first time.
That sounds familiar, actually.
After Normandy. Yeah, that big cross there, the ring cross. That's for him. So he fled France just before the surrender in June 1940. Again, it's a very complicated topic. It's not my expertise by any means, but so there was a free French presence on the Allied side the entire time.
So he basically, because the French government surrendered, is the way I understand it, but he refused to acknowledge that surrender?
Yeah, they were the technical, legitimate, and recognized government of France. Still, Vichy is what they're called.
Should I say that again? They were called what?
Vichy, like the town Vichy, and they do water, and there's a makeup company called that. You
know,
I believe. They were a collaborist, pro-Nazi government that contributed to the Holocaust. So... Mm. Again, not my area of expertise, very controversial still in France today, as you can imagine.
Sure.
So there was a few French, free French soldiers actually in Hong Kong, not very many of them. But
That's where I came across it.
Because it's a mishmash of people from everywhere.
Yeah. United Kingdom, obviously, Hong Kong, India, Canada, Republic of China, Free France against Japan. 14,500, this is all according to Wikipedia, I don't know if this holds up, but about 15,000 troops on the British side, almost 30,000 on the on the Japanese side.
Yeah.
2,113 killed or missing on the on the British side. So then the Canadian troops that were there that were involved, they got shipped from Canada for that fight, or they were already stationed in Hong Kong?
So no, they were sent, they weren't sent to fight per se. So they were sent on a request from the British government, a request, not an order to do so. We could have said no, because Canada did say no multiple times to British requests before and after Hong Kong. So they were sent to kind of be like, you know, as they say, like show the flag, be like, we're here, we're going to fight if you come to try and stop them. It didn't work. They weren't expecting a fight right away. They knew war might come soon, but they weren't expecting it for months and months and months. I mean, even Japan had not decided to attack until just before Pearl Harbor. It wasn't set in stone. Again, there's tons of myths and misunderstandings around the outbreak of war in the Pacific. It's a complicated thing.
Sure.
It's not quite like the Europe, you know, they invaded Poland. That's what happened. I mean, the Pacific is far more complicated. They were sent as part of this kind of Commonwealth force to try to deter Japan from attacking Hong Kong. And obviously it didn't work because Japan attacked all European colonies across East Asia.
Something just occurred to me, and I've never really thought about it, but do you think that, I mean, because most of the focus, people that love World War II in general, Canada and elsewhere, it's all very, you know, Normandy and Europe and maybe North Africa a little, the, you know, bombing of London and U-boats in Canada, blah, blah, blah. But I wonder, I can't help but think, do you think there's a noticeable or a conscious Western bias that we focus so much on kind of the Western side, and in my experience, people that I know spend very little time discussing about, you know, the theater in the Pacific.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, Canada specifically, because again, I've had some many years to think about these kinds of questions, right? Mm-hmm. Canada and still, I would argue today, is European focused. Got some, again, theories why that is. I mean, racial issues is part of it, or just straight up racism.
Colonial issues.
is an issue. Trade, cultural connections, all that fun stuff. So I think, Europe gets the focus because of that. But we are a Pacific nation. Still are. We always have been. I mean, literally. Like, BC comes into Confederation, one of the earliest provinces, all the way out there on its lonesome.
Yeah.
But we don't focus on the Pacific, and I think we should. I mean, and that's part of the reason why I did Hong Kong, because I feel like it didn't get the attention it deserves. And these stories are not fully understood. And what does that still mean today? I mean, Hong Kong is still alluded to in all kinds of ways. I mean, anything happens in China or Hong Kong itself, and we go straight to, we sent Canadian boys there in 1941.
Yeah.
Without people fully understanding, especially the people who make such claims, what that means. So that's why I do it. And I think, it's a conscious bias. Also, it's just a numbers game. We sent several divisions, thousands of, you know, aviators. The Navy's main focus was the North Atlantic.
Of course.
We sent two battalions, which is about 2,000 men, to East Asia. handful of aviators, and then we were supposed to send a whole division to participate in the landings in Japan, mainland, sorry, the main the home islands of Japan, which obviously never happened because of the atomic bombings. But that just pales in comparison to the numbers of Europe. And also you have the connection to the First World War, which are still so strong 100 plus years later.
Yeah. Does Canada have any connection to the atomic bombs?
We supplied some of the plutonium.
Cool. Cool.
Where do we get other, plutonium from? Chalk River, which still operates today.
Where's that, sorry?
Yeah. So other than that,
Where was that, sorry? Where's it?
Sorry, Chalk River.
Where's that?
Still a nuclear plant there today, I do believe. Yeah.
That's interesting.
It was a British American project. Canada had a little place in it, just supplying material, but nothing decision wise or anything like that. I'm sure there's Canadians involved in the Manhattan Project. The Manhattan Project was massive. I'm not going to say no Canadians were there, but I mean, it wasn't a Canadian government participation by any means.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into even more of that. There's a lot of squirrely things about, you know, dropping nukes on people. But one thing I've always found interesting, this is just a military fact in general, nothing to do with Canada, but that the jet stream was discovered because of bombing runs over Japan or over Tokyo, which is super interesting.
It was. It's true.
And they don't talk about it either, that this was, what was it now? In one drop or something, it was in 2 days, they killed something like hundreds of thousands of people or something crazy with napalm.
Yeah, the 2 day, 3 day, I can't remember exactly. 2 days at least of Tokyo, March 45, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
Killed more people, ten thousands of more than the atomic bombings combined.
Yeah.
Because they burned Tokyo to the ground.
And we don't talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is talked about in military history circles, but again, I got to keep reminding myself that that's not the thing. It's everyday people, or even, you know, people who have, you know, slight enthusiasm, or sorry, like, because the enthusiasts, right, talk about what they talk about, and they get stuck in silos or their one topic, and some of them are interested in the bombings and things like that, but these things are not at the top of our minds. But again, it's just like everything else in the Second World War. It's complicated. It's not black and white. There's no good guys in any of this.
Geopolitics, really. Man.
it's complicated, is what I'll say.
Yep. Wasn't it Winston Churchill that said? Wasn't it Winston Churchill that said, "No great man is a good man"?
Yeah, he said something like that.
Allegedly, I've seen it quoted.
He said a lot of things. Yeah. He said a lot of things.
Just like Abraham Lincoln apparently did. Or Albert Einstein. But no, I like hearing the stories, you know, and especially when Canadians are involved. Like, again, I did not know about the Battle of Hong Kong, and I was there. Didn't even occur to me to look.
It's an interesting one, right? Because Hong Kong itself has undergone so many changes, even with the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And over, it's been so interesting that city is developed way beyond what it used to look like. I mean, when I do my own research and like look at just some quick photos, and then I see photos today, and it's just like, this is the same place.
That place is wild.
It's crazy.
Well, and I grew up in rural Manitoba, where our entire provincial population is approximately 1.5 million people. So then I go to Hong Kong, which the city has, I think, 8 million? No, not that much. 4 million?
No, 4 or 5 million.
Something like that. But even that is bananas to me, because there's apartment buildings, and they're just one after another, after another, after another, after another.
It's crazy. It's so built up, and it's so... It's crazy. I mean, just to think about, especially what I do, right, with understanding it, what it looked like in 41, and I found footage of what it looked like in 41, and I put on my YouTube channel and everything, and it just blows my...
I'll have to look back on that. Excuse me. Yeah, that'd be really cool to see. Because it was definitely not the hub, or not in the same way that not the financial hub, I guess, that it is now.
Not in that way, no. That's a real post-war strength of Hong Kong, which is, again, it's great. I think to me that's a good thing, because it just showed the resilience of people to bounce back from.
Absolutely.
What happened.
There was, in preparation for this, I was looking up some random interesting, you know, facts and stuff. This one has nothing to do with that. No, that's not Canada. Anyway, this was written by the USO, and so they have a bunch of kind of things that they it's a bit condescending because it's written by the US, but they rounded up 15 need to know facts about the Canadian Armed Forces. A couple of them are pretty meh, but one that jumped out to me here, where was it now? oh yeah, in 2016, Canadian Brigadier General Jenny Karinen, who enlisted in 1986, became the first ever female combat general in the world. Go Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Also, at only 870 kilometers from the North Pole, Canadian Force Station Alert, none of it is the northernmost permanently inhabited location in the world. During the Cold War, the location was also used to intercept Soviet radio signals due to its close proximity to Moscow.
Yep.
It
started as a radar station to intercept Soviet bombers.
May as well. it's a good place as any.
Well, it's right there. I mean, yeah, it's very close.
You basically just spit and you land somewhere in Russia.
Pretty much.
Yeah, we helped develop the digital camouflage uniform pattern that's worn by militaries around the world. Also, this is the one that really jumped out. Remember now, number 11 on this list of 15. Speaking of the Royal Military College is what they were talking about. Every year, more or less, the university's hockey team faces off against its American neighbor, West Point Academy, in what is now recognized as the longest-running international hockey series in history. In 2016, the teams competed in the series' 80th anniversary game.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's hockey's crazy. Everywhere. It's been going on for so long. Yeah, that hockey's so popular at both those service academies. I think is pretty funny to me. I mean, it makes sense. Upstate New York, right? They like hockey like we do.
Yeah, they do. It's a shame their team sucks.
Yeah,
you're in Ottawa. You know what having a bad team feels like.
Oh, I'm a Habs fan, but
oh, yeah.
Well, hey, Cup final didn't win, but at least they made it. RMC is really interesting. They've been around a long, long time, and the impact on the Canadian military and RMC is undeniable. And so is hockey. I mean, I talk about this all the time. Hockey, especially with Brits, they don't quite get it, but it's an important part of the Canadian Armed Forces. I mean, we built a rink in Kandahar. I mean, we built POW camps. It's what they always have done.
We sort of have to. If anything, that's our globalist mission is just to bring hockey all over.
Yeah, I've seen some funny photos of like a destroyer that's stopped somewhere in the Persian Gulf and they've busted out the sticks. I think that's great.
And it's also a bit of home. Making sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever consider serving yourself? Assuming you haven't.
I did. I don't know. Long time ago. Mm. I just didn't end up doing it, actually, because I got into grad school. I got into do my master's, so that kind of put it on the back burner, and then just life has its, ways of twists and turns and things like that. But no, I never did. But I did think about it pretty seriously at that point. But academics called and kind of put me on the path I'm on now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've never seriously considered it personally, but I guess I'm a bit of a wimp. Anyway, before I forget again, I was going to ask, with the Canadian story in Vietnam, again, I know a little bit about it from, thanks to Craig Baird, he did a long thing about how technically Canada was, this is my understanding, you can correct all of this, my understanding is that Canada didn't officially take part in Vietnam, but many, perhaps hundreds, I don't know if thousands of Canadian folks decided to, we're going to do it anyway. So they either they joined, I guess, American battalions or something, or went separately. I'm not sure. So maybe briefly or longly, however you like, tell the story of Canada and Vietnam.
It's an interesting story. So it's like you said, the Canadians wouldn't cross the border and enlist in the U.S. Army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, what have you. Again, the numbers are a bit sketchy. At least 10,000, they think, is the number.
Wow.
Yeah. At least. It's probably more. Just because, again, it's kind of complicated, right? Like, who's a Canadian, who's not? Like, you're born in Canada and live in the States your whole life.
Yeah.
Are you Canadian? Do you count? So there's that part of it. Yeah, Canada's not involved in the fighting in Vietnam. Mm. Canada's actually in Vietnam
Like as a country, you mean?
Sorry?
As a country, you mean, like on an official sense?
Yeah, no combat rules. Canada was there for the first peace agreement that came in place in 1954 between the French government and the Vietnamese rebels, the Viet Minh, as they were called. And obviously that didn't hold. And then we were sent in again when the Americans and the North Vietnamese negotiated. So we've been trying to take that role, but also the big one, other than the Canadians who crossed the border to enlist, was the arms manufacturing that took place in Canada through the entire conflict, and the amount of supplies, napalm being a big one, and armored vehicles were sent to the United States. And that's a big part of Canada still today is military manufacturing, arms manufacturing. Mm-hmm. It's a big one. They supplied a lot to the American military, and it had its benefits in Canada, right? Job creation and money in the economy. So it's a delicate balance. I don't have on it, but I'm just reporting how it went down.
Yeah.
And then also the next important one, I think, is the so-called draft dodgers, right? That came north to avoid service.
Yeah.
They've had major impact on Canada today. I mean, there's all kinds of people still here who are now Canadians and consider themselves Canadians because of that reason. So it's something that we're starting to look at a little bit more. It's getting more attention, which I think is a great thing. Again, it's one of those stories of Canada's the good guy, you know, we're going to help keep peace, but we're also going to give napalm to one side.
Yeah. It's a bit icky because, yeah, they can sit back and say, no, we don't support this war. We're not getting involved. But here's some weapons.
Do with them what you will. Yeah. Or we support your overall objective. We just don't like the way you're doing it. We've done a lot.
Which is tacitly being... You're involved anyway. You're tacitly complicit is the word I was going to use.
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, yeah, like that's just not even Vietnam. Like Canada's done that before, and we're still doing it. Again, I'm not here just to disparage Canadian military, obviously.
Of course not. No.
But again, like I said, you got to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. And again, depending on your opinion, that can go either way. But I think it's really interesting what Canadian military history can mean is, I think, a lot deeper than a lot of people are willing to admit.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam War, like that's a perfect example, or the tens of thousands of Canadians, or what was thought to be Canadians at the time, that volunteered to fight in the U.S. Civil War.
Oh, on both, interesting.
Both sides.
Huh.
Another big one that had a huge impact on this country.
I had no idea.
That doesn't get talked about. I mean, it happens. And then you have Canadians who fight in the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s, taking on, you know, the fascist governments of Italy, Spain, and Germany. Again, they have monuments and things like that, but it's a small story that I think deserves more attention. And we need to look at it as Canadian and broaden what that means. And that's kind of what I try to do.
Yeah.
I like to blur the lines a lot.
As you should. Yeah.
I don't like getting stuck in a box. It drives me really crazy.
Can't put baby in the corner, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, the dirty dancing of military history.
It's a spinoff.
There's a t-shirt for you.
Yeah.
It's just, the Vietnam example, I think, is perfect. And thanks for asking that, because I think it's a good way of thinking about this. What does that mean? What does all of this mean? How do we even think about that? And around Remembrance Day is a perfect time for that. Yes, it's time for reflection and sorrow and pride and just pure remembrance. But you can look at that and be like, yeah, Canadians fought against the fascist government in Spain. To me, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they're getting recognition, but it needs to be more of the consciousness, you know, the collective memory, as they say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Vietnam's a perfect example. It's so wide and we tend to look at it so narrowly. And I think that's a mistake.
I think you're right. Well, like with anything going on in the world, I mean, everything lacks nuance and everyone hates nuance and everyone's like, we want it to be, you're good, we're bad, or vice versa, or we're good and those are bad. And it's, frankly, we kind of have an easy kind of punching bag just below the border. We're like, no, Canada's good, America bad. We're good, but America's bad.
And yeah, it's a bit of an aside, but that's something we have to move away from.
Mm-hmm.
if we're fully going to understand ourselves, we have to stop comparing ourselves. And not even just the United States. We did with Britain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agree with France. I mean, that's not new. It wasn't just because all of a sudden we look at the United States. Is
yeah.
We're always comparing ourselves. We need to take a hard look at what Canada can mean. I mean, that definition changes a lot, and it's still changing. Again,
as it should.
Bad. It just is.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we should do. I mean, the whole focus on America is obviously you can't ignore it, but
yeah.
It shouldn't be the main focus, right? We shouldn't be like, okay, what is Canada? What is not what Canada isn't, I think is probably the best way to say that.
I love that. Yeah. And again, that really leads into the, what we were talking about before, where we need to really hammer out and be willing to stand on our own feet and be like Canadians, even if they were under the British flag at the time, people born in Ontario or born in Nova Scotia or born on, quote, Canadian soil, whatever that means, went and did heroic and ferocious things. And it's not always good. There's no way war is bad. I think that's a pretty hot take. Hot take on the Two Dudes podcast, but you know, there's, you know, war isn't a good thing, and
no.
it can make bad people out of good people. But at the same time, a lot of good people sacrifice themselves and their families and everything that they stood for, or for the fight for everything they stood for, and that's you gotta applaud that.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head again with the nuance.
Mm-hmm.
Wants is not a welcomed thing by a lot of people. And I deal with that all the time in my daily running, because it's literally my Twitter account's a daily account, right? So I mm-hmm. run into all the time of people wanting black and white definitions. Like I did one post, last couple of weeks ago, about a Canadian Victoria Cross winner from the Crimean War, you know, the charge of the Light Brigade. That there was a Canadian involved. He was born in Ontario. I can't remember. Nova Scotia, Ontario. Doesn't matter. It's part of Canada now. And I got flack for being like, he's not Canadian, or Canada didn't exist. And I went, okay, doesn't matter. I don't care.
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me what? So I can only boast after 1867. We weren't even technically independent then either. Like, when does it start? 1926. Yeah. Like, I mean, sorry, that's when we technically gained full independence.
Yeah.
Which most people don't know. We did not have control.
Say the date again.
With the the Balfour I forget the name of it. Anyway, it's 1926 is when Canada technically gains full control of its foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think most people would agree is an important part of being an independent state.
No,
doesn't get talked about a lot. Technically, Vimy Ridge did not happen under Canadian independence, if you want to call it that. So anyway, so again, yeah, this lack of nuance, understanding. There's a lot of gray out there and we don't like it, but I think we need to embrace it. Even if we don't like it, too bad. History is supposed to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah. I love that quote. Mm-hmm. That one was going around a lot for less good reasons, but you're absolutely right.
It's just true. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of nasty, bad things happening with that. But I mean, that applies to all levels, right?
Yep.
From discussing, you know, things like slavery and complacency in that, to being like, yeah, Canada didn't have its foreign control of its own foreign policy until 1926. Like, these things are all uncomfortable. Yes, some are much worse than others, but if you're not uncomfortable with what's going on when you're doing history, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
you're just doing mythology at this point, and that doesn't do any good.
I love that. That's a great way to. I just read a story recently about how when the folks in Haiti. Kicked out the French. The slaves had a big giant slave revolt. They took over the whole country. France and also the U.S. and other powers that be at the time, they forced the Haitian ex-slaves to pay reparations to the French government from a French bank. So they had to borrow it. I think it was the equivalent of like billions now, whatever it was.
Mm.
They had to literally, the only bank that they could get the money from was a French bank. So they had to borrow billions of dollars from a French bank to pay the French, even though they were the ones that were enslaved for their whole lives.
Yep.
Foreign politics, man. You know?
There's all kinds of things like that in Canadian history, as we've learned over the last, the residential schools, that's not news. Mm-hmm. It's been known for
years.
Especially, I mean, probably didn't want to talk about the graves and the graveyards, but those have been known about. I mean, it's just reached national level or national discussion recently. It's been known about since they happened. I mean, kids are going to notice when their friends are not in school anymore. Yeah. they're going to be traumatized for the rest of their life, as happened to thousands. But anyway, so yeah, Canada is not immune from any of this. And again, I'm not saying this to be like Canada sucks. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because that's not what I believe. But we have our good and we have our bad, and we should try to do more good than we do bad. That's what I think. And that's what I try to do. I try to highlight both to be like, let's not do the bad anymore, guys. Let's try not to. I mean,
it's... Well, we got to work through the nuance to transcend the negativity, if that makes any sense, right? Like we can acknowledge it and let's try and push past it. Let's be better.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I mean, it sounds kind of counterintuitive to military history, right? Because, you know, war is death and destruction. War is hell. I think I literally said that on Twitter today, like 3 times. it's just true. But there's things to be learned and things to be proud of and things to be ashamed of. Mm-hmm. We can't learn from them.
For sure. I'm wondering, this is probably a stupid question, but has Canada that you know of ever tried to colonize anywhere?
Depends what you mean colonize.
Ooh. By any definition, by any stretch of a loosey-goosey definition, have we occupied or colonized anywhere?
The entire country.
Well, of course. But I mean, like, Canada itself as a, like, not part of the British Empire, but as Canada, you know, we plant our flag and we'll be like, this is Canada.
No, not in that sense. I mean, yeah, I mean, again, that's a difficult one. Sure. I mean, ask people in Newfoundland, they're going to say, yeah, you guys did.
It's true. I mean, that's true.
They voted in, but other people were like, we don't want you here. We don't want you.
Even Nova Scotia a little bit didn't want to join, I don't think.
Yeah, they almost gave back, actually. Yeah, that's a funny one, actually. They joined Confederation first and almost had a vote to come back out.
Oh, the Scots.
That was a whole other, that was like a local thing. Anyway, not in like, if you're going to go the more, I don't even know what word to use, the European sense of colonization. The
traditional sense.
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, jump on a boat, bring a flag and a bunch of guns and be like, this is our land now.
Well, no, frankly, even the looser American term, you know, as in Guam or Puerto Rico or, you know, they're technically, you know, empire building without admitting that they're empire building.
No, nothing like that. Nothing that's ever happened in terms of, like, say, outside the established or internationally recognized borders of Canada. There was some discussion, I can't remember exactly when, maybe the 80s, 90s, of us joining, or how the best way to say this, some of the British colonies in the Caribbean joining Confederation.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of that. There was a bit of talk about that. It never obviously happened. But that would have been because they wanted to. We couldn't force them to do anything anyway. Even if we wanted to, I don't know how we'd even get down there without taking American cruise ships or something.
Yeah,
it's not in that traditional sense. No, and again, this isn't just me trying to whitewash it. It's just it isn't. But then you can look at how the country was developed, right? The entire Northwest Territories, as it used to be, which was most of the country, right? Yeah. That was pretty violent, and bloody.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, If we're being honest, if Canada was an established country in the 1600s, 1500s, they would have been gung-ho trying to claim up land as much like everyone else was. So
yeah, they would have been doing the same thing, I would imagine.
Yeah. Especially and now this reminds me, actually, because I think I've looked this up before. Maybe I've mentioned on the show before. But yeah, the potential annexation of the Turks and Caicos Islands by Canada.
Turks and Caicos, that's it. Yeah, it was driving me crazy. Yeah. Beautiful place.
I've heard. It sounds great. James Duffy of KSL goes there all the time.
I loved it. It was amazing.
I'd love to go there. Well, imagine if it was Canadian.
That'd be great. I'd love that. But
been discussed at both the federal and provincial levels in Canada, while the Canadian government has previously indicated that it would be open to exploring methods of increasing economic and social ties with Turks and Caicos. There's been no official statement from Ottawa on the notion of transferring sovereignty from the territory or over the territory from the United Kingdom.
Yeah. That's the only one I can think of that would be that extra outside the, determined borders of Canada.
Yeah.
Of trying to expand. But again, I'm sure there's some people, like I said, in Newfoundland who would very much disagree.
Well, even that, a lot of people don't realize that during World War II, Newfoundland wasn't part of Canada.
Yep.
But most people don't know that.
Yeah, it's a big part of the war, actually. I mean, I've seen the paperwork and myself being like, we have to reach agreements with the Newfoundlanders. They're calling us foreigners because they were, because it's true. That's worth its own book in and of itself. It's just so interesting, but it's another war that we don't talk about because we're focused on other things.
Well, yeah, because even during, if I remember right, even in Heather's book, she had mentioned, I believe, that during World War One, or correct me, the First World War. I don't call it World War One anymore.
Unless you're in the U.S., you can get away with that.
Exactly. Just like apparently it's not lieutenant, it's lieutenant.
I'm
trying to get more used to that. She was talking about how, during the war, as things were ramping up, Canada was raising troops while also Newfoundland was raising troops.
Yeah, so. Newfoundland has its own First World War history, completely separate of the Canadian Corps. It's endlessly fascinating. I mean, they fought at Gallipoli, for your listeners who know about that. Big Australian-New Zealander myth, connections to Gallipoli and all that stuff. And then they fought on the first day of the Somme, got basically wiped out. They have their own war, Second World War history as well. They have their own thing going on. So it's really interesting, because they don't join Confederation until 1949.
Yeah. That's the problem. Like, war is bad, obviously, but it's so interesting. There's just so... this is going to sound terrible, and maybe I'll get canceled for it, but even colonization is fascinating. Even though it's god-awful, and there's negative things all over the place, I can't help but... love isn't the right word, but I'm utterly fascinated by, like, you know, the Dutch East India Company and the British India Company and all these basically corporations taking over sections of land that get incorporated into the empire, and just sort of watching the maps fold out and it's mind-boggling and it's terrible.
It's fascinating. I've had people ask me about that as well, right? Like, it kind of, it's not a love, it's not a like, it's a interest, it's a fascination. And it sounds terrible again, but I've said this to other people. It's when you're driving down the highway and you slow down when there's a car crash.
Yeah.
People do that all the time.
I hate that.
Saw that on the weekend myself. But anyway, I think that's a good way of putting it. It's something awful.
Yeah.
You can't not look at it. But also, history takes it another step further and is supposed to be about learning, right? It's about understanding who we are, how we got here. Like, a lot of people are not looking at that car crash to be like, I don't want to do that. They're like, oh, car crash. Which I think is a problem.
Of course.
But I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's all awful. But me personally, I can't speak for anybody else. I just try to limit future awful.
And as long as you're willing to acknowledge that there is awful. Because again, a lot of people, I hate to keep knocking on the Americans, but that's very common that there's the myth, as you say, gets built up, and then that's the official story. That's all people want to know about. But even if you look at it, I still know people to this day that are like, well, you know, if the British didn't come here and take over this country, you know, we did them a favor, them being the indigenous, you know, and that type of nonsense. And they would say the same thing about, well, what if France didn't take over Laos? Like, where would they be, or whatever, you know, like that. That's not really how it works.
Yeah, it's not how any of that works.
No, it's absolutely
not even close.
No, it's nonsense.
But anyway, so that's probably my big takeaway is it's awful. Military history at war, like you keep saying, war is awful. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But we learn, and I think we need to start in the Canadian context, understanding it better within its own contained but broad definition of what that means, if that makes any sense. Trying to look from it through another lens and use our own.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll start wrapping it up. I don't want to take too much of your time here, but what kind of, because we're recording this a bit early, but it's going to drop on Remembrance Day, kind of along that vein, we've touched a bit on kind of the heroics of Canadians and Canadian troops and whether or not they were Canadian, whatever.
That's a whole other thing, but yeah.
Yeah. kind of to tie it all together, let's end with kind of a message of what, kind of give us a general sense of, I guess, Canadians at war and kind of what we should take from it. What kind of, I don't know how to describe what I'm thinking right now. Just sort of not to end on you know, war is shit, but sort of like the achievements of Canadian vets.
Yeah. I think a good way to say that is there's lots that Canada has done in military history, a lot of good, a lot of things to have pride in and being a Canadian, and what we've done. I mean, Second World War. I mean, you can't deny that one. Second World War. Sorry, I thought I said World War II. Second World War. and ending those fascist regimes. That had to happen. I mean, you can't move past that one. And there's a lot to be proud in of there. Yeah, we did a lot of stupid stuff during that war and a lot of things that didn't help. But we also helped take those regimes down. I mean, that's a way to look at it, right? Yes, of course, we interned Canadian citizens of Japanese ancestry.
Yeah.
Also took out Hitler. I mean, it's not black and white. It's the gray, but you can be proud of parts of the gray, I guess is a good way to say this.
Yeah.
You can be proud of the Vimy Ridges. You can be proud of the Juneau Beaches. You can be proud of all of these things, but not as long as you don't forget the nasty and the bad and learn from the nasty and the bad. I guess I keep saying that, but it's just what I believe.
It's totally true. Proud of the gray might have to be the title of this episode. Yeah.
You got to learn from the bad, the gray, but also you can be proud of parts of the gray, as long as you don't, you know, leave out the bad. That's a big part of kind of what my takeaway would be for Remembrance Day, because I think that ties in perfectly. Remember these people that sacrificed, people who died, the people who gave up everything, or the people who didn't die but came home and never lived again. You know what I mean?
Of course.
That happened to thousands, thousands, and people didn't even serve in combat. It happened to men, women, all branches, civilians, these kinds of things. It affected Canadian society to this day. Yeah. I mean, we're still feeling the ramifications of the Second World War today in ways that you probably wouldn't, that most people wouldn't even think about. Like the family units that were ripped apart by that war are still being felt today. And it's just, it's something I think we got to remember that too. But again, I'm not saying don't remember the good things, because I do believe we need to. Remembrance Day is a good day to do that.
Of course. No, that's a good summation. So let's dial it down here. Got any plugs? Plug all of your accounts. And actually, before we get to that, I should have begun this in the beginning. Normally, we ask what your favorite movie is, just to get to know people. But what's your favorite war movie as a Canadian history guy?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Man, there's a lot. lots. Bridge Too Far, maybe, just because of nostalgic reasons.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Bridge Too Canadians Far. In it. Canada wasn't even involved in it. It's Operation Market Garden. Just because it was one of the first movies I ever watched, with my dad, but also because of how that movie goes. I was expecting the hurrah, they're going to get saved at the end. And they don't.
Spoiler alert. Jeez.
It's a 50-plus-year-old movie.
Yeah, it's from 1977, but whatever.
Yeah, it's older than me, and I'm in my early 30s. So if you haven't seen it yet, that's on you. It's also based on historical events. That is extremely well known. But anyway, so that's probably why. Just because of nostalgic reasons and one of those experiences that flips perceptions on its head. So that's probably why I picked that one.
I'll have to check it out. I've never watched it. That's cool.
If you can watch it, it's long, but it's definitely worth it.
Is the director related to David Attenborough? Because that would be super cool.
Yes, that was
cool.
His brother.
Richard Attenborough. I could listen to David Attenborough just read the phone book, and I would be just in my glory.
Yeah, his brother. He's passed away now, but that was his brother.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. Well, that's good to know. I should have started with that, but I totally goofed. Anyway, so let's plug all of your pluggables and kind of what. Also, how awful is it to post every day?
It's not bad, actually. I it feels weird. Not sometimes I do a couple days in advance, and the days I don't do anything, it's a little weird.
It's got an itchy finger.
It's a lot of work. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah,
wouldn't suggest it for other people. But yeah,
it's like weekly podcasts. I wouldn't suggest that to anybody either.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. I mean, even I do that and the YouTube, so it's a lot. But yeah, so the accounts are all called On This Day in Canadian Military History. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and on YouTube. And the YouTube channel is one I'm trying to grow right now. So that's the big one. If people can check that out and watch the videos and subscribe, especially, is a big one for me.
Cool. definitely people check it out. I think you also have a Patreon and whatnot. So if you want to support.
Yeah, there's a Patreon that's all connected through the socials. Yeah.
Yeah. Hit the links, folks. Go support a historical fella doing the Lord's work. but no, that's good. Anything else you want to mention before we shut her down?
No, just, yeah, finish again what I already said. Remembrance Day is a good day to stop and literally think for 2 minutes about what all this means.
Go buy a poppy. They were super low during when COVID started, but we're back kind of open again. Go buy a poppy. Everybody yep. buy a handful of poppies. If you got a buck in your pocket, buy 4 poppies, however many you want.
Yep.
But yeah, no, that's good. All right, folks. Well, thanks for joining us, Brad. This was a blast. We'll definitely keep in touch, and I'll be following your socials. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Oh, I just said socials. I hate that. I'm social media. I don't say socials. Nope. Craig's going to have a field day because I bugged him about it. Anyway, thanks again, Brad. This is fun.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, man. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye. All right, so now it's just me like doing the outro as usual. Well, not as usual, but that's the problem. It's not usual. So folks, definitely go follow Brad St. Croix, check out On This Day in Canadian Military History, learn a little something. Cat's here. Oh. luckily nobody watches the video, so you'll be fine. But yeah, so definitely check him out. OTD, let's quickly find his Twitter so I can read it properly. It is On This Day, but he goes, but yeah, OTD in Canadian Military History, but his handle is... Oof. Maya, shut up. Our cat is having a field day down here because Cat was down here. Yeah, OTD can MILHIS on Twitter. I assume it's similar elsewhere, so definitely check them out. And while you're there, follow the Two Idiots Podcast. We're Two Idiots Podcast on Instagram. We are Two Idiots Podcast on Facebook. We're Two Idiots Show on Twitter. So give us a follow. Say hi. We like to hear from people. Our email is doubleidiotspodcast@gmail.com. Definitely send us a line if you have any guest suggestions. Like Brad reached out to us about joining the show. So if you want to join the show, we're willing to listen. So hit us up. Say hi. Follow, share, rate, review. We are going to be played out this week by a song. Oh, it's, shut up. yeah, she's not a quiet cat. just pull her off the table. Anyway, if anyone heard that, I could hear it in my headphones. So, but anyway, sorry, we're going to be played out by Beau Armstrong. He recommended that we listen to, I need to find a message here, by Beau Armstrong. His newest single is Get It Right. So we're going to be played out by Get It Right by Beau Armstrong. Find him on Spotify, probably Apple Music, wherever people listen to music these days. So check him out. Give him a follow. Beau_ Armstrong on Instagram. Yeah, so that's Beau Armstrong. Get It Right. All right, folks. Goodbye.
track.